Hello world, this is Twani Price, host of Abroad Drinking Wine Podcast, where we discuss the ultimate life abroad, living like a local, launching my wine business in Cape Town, and helping locals start businesses. All this while drinking wine in a foreign country.
We're gonna get started, and I'm here in the studio. I'm here with Tinashe Naya Maduko. Did I say it right? Say it for me, please.
Yamadoka.
Yeah,
the D-O-K you can't even pronounce. It's difficult.
Yamadoka.
Yeah.
Yamadoka.
Yeah,
all right. Close. So I apologize because I messed it totally up on the intro. It was very Americanized of me, but like, I'm here with Tinashe. And I'm super excited to have you here. Super excited to have him in the studio. I feel like we go way back, well, like way back to like 3 years or so when I first started coming to SA.
That's long, eh?
Yeah, like maybe 2 years, 2016. Well, it's almost 2019, so we can say 3 years. Yeah, so I started coming in 2016, and I think that's when we met.
But we've met online before.
Yeah, because I was stalking. I'm telling all my little secrets right now, right?
Yeah, but welcome back. It's good to have you around.
Thank you.
Now for a little bit longer.
Yeah, so I'll be here for at least a year.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
great stuff.
Yeah, so Tinashe, let's just talk about like what's going on in your life. Like, I don't even know where to get started because I feel like I know so much about you just because there's so much about you in like the media and like you're blowing up.
Yeah, I'm doing the most, man. So if you don't find me in the test kitchen, I'm probably at the wine farm tasting, blending my kumusha wine. Yeah, reading up on a lot, updating my social page, interacting with my fellow drinkers.
You can say it, your fans. I feel like there's so many fans, like in around the world, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's been amazing. It's like it's no longer SA or where I grew up. I've got friends all over the world, and you know, getting your opinion, sharing their what they're drinking,
trying to get your wine like all over the world. Okay, so we'll get into that just in a minute, but like let's just backtrack because I tend to just like get right into things, but like let's just tell the world a little bit about who you are. I like to get a little personal, so why don't you just tell us first where you grew up?
Well, I grew up in Zimbabwe. I grew up in Harare. Born in a small town called Nyanga, but I stayed with my dad in Harare for most part of my life. Primary school there, went to high school in boarding, like all most Zimbabweans do. So, yeah, 6 years in high school, then I finished.
Like boarding, you mean like boarding school? Yeah. Like, so away from home?
Away from home. Yeah.
Like, so was that? Because, like, that's not normal for Americans. Like, is it like camp? I mean, you know, like summer camp is the same thing for us. Like, you go into summer camp.
Yeah. But it's still common in Zim. It was actually unusual for you not to go to boarding school. So.
That's so cool for parents. They get to get rid of their kids just like
so
that.
It's for me, I loved it then. Not that I wish to go back, but it builds you up. You learn to take care of yourself. And
so did you have a lot of friends from like the boarding school?
Yeah.
Like you keep in contact with them still?
Even up to now, yeah.
Nice.
Still talk about what we went through there and, you know, hustling and
the mischief.
Fending for yourself, yeah, mischief, a lot of it. Smoking, drinking.
Really?
Not the allowed stuff, but you turn out being a drinker for
Were you drinking wine?
Not at all, spirits mostly.
Like homemade spirits, or like you would go to the store and sneak them?
Go to the sneak room, yeah.
Nice.
So it's quite funny now, I look like most of my guys would say, oh, but this stuff was what got exploded from school, but you're doing it for a living. Yeah.
I know, right?
So yeah, after just went through 1 year of college, then I dropped out, ran into some financial difficulties. I had to find a job quickly. So I worked in a supermarket just from the bottom.
In Zimbabwe?
Yeah.
Nice.
Obviously, they put me in the management school, so I rose
the
up
supermarket
really,
did? Yeah. Wait, so you're telling me like even from a young age like that, people were like identifying you as like a leader and talent.
And
did you realize that at that time, or did you just say, okay, I'm just lucky?
I didn't realize that, because you know, it's 3 months I'm in the job, I'm pecking behind the tills, I'm working the till. 6 months down the line, the manager comes and says, no, there's this program coming up, junior management stuff in the whole group, that we're signing you up. And I remember it caused an uproar, because back then, you know, the guys were there working there already, and older guys. I'm like, but this guy's just coming off from school.
Like, he just got here.
Luckily, I'd nailed my exams, like, at like high grades. So they're like, but this boy is high grades, you guys would have high grades. And blah blah blah, but he took care of me, and even up to now I still go back to him and like ask him, what did you even see in me back then when I was young? So
I feel like he probably feels super proud, because he obviously saw something.
And that was like, I was almost 18, just about 18, and I was managing people old enough to be my grandparents. So.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so obviously it became down up to 2008 when things started to get messed up in SA, in Zim. And for me, the reality was, I'm working for a supermarket chain. I've got money, but I don't have anything to buy in the store. You know, the shelves are empty. And it was just one period of, if we had the chance to leave and go somewhere else, we had to. So luckily I had a friend who was in Cape Town. And back then, you know, people were telling you, know, in SA, you know, they're posting pictures at Kemp's Bay or the Mandela statue, you know, Table Mountain. You're like, okay.
Like, looks like a beautiful place. Like, I mean, it's not so bad, though.
Yeah.
It's so, not so bad. Like,
then I come back, you know, I've got my one bag of change of clothes, and, you know, came to Kemp. Luckily, I had a bit of savings. You know, my friend picked me up at the bus station. We're driving, you're staying in Woodstock for them. Then we get into the place, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm meeting the guys here. I'm like, okay, maybe these are his friends, they're visiting. It's time to sleep, and it's like, no, we all live here. So it's like,
oh, wow, like how many people?
Yeah, he had four guys was sharing a place with one room, so I had to crunch a bed with them. And so for me, it was, no, you're coming back from Zim. Obviously, the stuff's all made up, but you're like, coming from a big
like,
house.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. Like, in Zim, was it kind of like you had, like, middle class? Like,
Yeah. I was fortunate to be in a middle class environment, you know.
So then when you had to go to this smaller environment, you were kind of like, okay, right.
What's happening here? It's kind of cool to start off with, you know. But luckily, I had a bit of savings, and next door to us was a vacant room. So I said, okay, dude, I think I can afford for a while. Let me move to the next one. But I always say sometimes life humbles, and that's where you start realizing, okay, this is a reality, and you gotta find ways to live around it, you know?
Well, sometimes I always say, too, like, you have to take, not you have to, but sometimes you may have to take a couple steps back so that you can leap forward, you know? And a lot of times people don't really get that. They don't want to put in the work. Like, this place that I have right now is a lot smaller than my place in LA.
Yeah.
But, you know,
All right,
it's comfortable.
Yeah, it's gonna, you know, I work.
It's safe.
So the whole idea was, obviously, I've got my bunch of certificates and work experience, and the first place you look for work is a supermarket. That's the environment I was so used to. So there were a couple of Congolese guys in the other room who worked at a local spa. I'm like, guys, can you hook me up as a manager? I want to. The first thing they were doing was laughing at me. I was like, dude. Like,
why were they laughing at you?
It's like, you want a manager position that doesn't happen in SA. I'm like, dude, but what we can tell you is there's a backup position. I'm like, okay, guys, we can put that to rest. So I chilled for some while, then money starts to run out, and by then I also find out my girlfriend then was pregnant, and geez, you know, I need to start working.
Your daughter is so cute. What's her name?
That's the older one. This is the younger one.
Oh, this is the younger one. This is the older one. Okay, yeah.
Older one, she's
adorable too.
So. Yeah, I had to go back to the baker guys, and like, guys, hook me up. I don't know how to bake bread. I know how to cost, because I managed a bakery in a supermarket. So, okay, just go and tell him this, this, the manager now. We'll teach you everything. In return, we'll, you have to teach us English. So I went there, got the job, got to the bakery. And I remember it was 2008, one of the coldest winters. You have to wake up at 4 in the AM, you know, going to bake bread. And it was fun. Like I said, it was humbling, but then it became being fun, interacting with these guys, learning a lot, you know.
Teaching them English.
Yeah, I was learning how to make my own hot cross bun, you know, shea butter, bake my own bread. And I was like,
so that's kind of when you started becoming the chef, because I watch you on Instagram and on Facebook, and like there is like Chef Tinashe.
But yeah, the food bug hadn't beat me then. I was just, you know, I was just loving it. But but one thing which was evident was like now when we go back home, most of the guys are staying with now. I realized they're working in restaurants. They're making more money than I am, and they're just working, you know. Come now, I made this $100 tip, I made this 50 rand tip, and I'm like, geez, this is what I'm working for all week, and I'm loving it. So, you know, we hook you up, let's draft a nice. I never worked in a restaurant, so you had to make up a CV. And then you just say you worked this for experience if they call us, you know. No, because
so like a CV is like a
resume.
That's curriculum what I've been I've been looking at that online, because you know I'm looking for like jobs and stuff like that too here. And so CV? I'm like, what's a CV? A cover letter? No, wait. So yeah. CV is a resume, right? Yes.
So I print one page, you know, just to wake up, go to work, finish around 12. Take a shower, go to the waterfront, because waterfront was the ish thing then, back in 2008. Drop CVs all over, Century City, drop CVs all over, like any mall. I used to get call-ups, but now I used to get stuck because they asked me that question, I don't know. And I've been consistent, in, if I didn't know, I'll tell them I don't know. So they say, ah, so you want someone to know? Like, okay, it's fine. Then in between time, I also, there was a 5 rand, our internet shop, like just close to the spy work. So I used to make there, send my resume to Gumtree, local Gumtree.
Oh yeah, Gumtree, right.
So I used to just send stuff there. Just so by one day I just receive a message and say, oh, we saw your CV, are you available to come to the roundhouse? Like, where's the roundhouse? Okay, what is this? I googled, oh, there's a new restaurant opening in Kempsville. Like, oh, okay. So I went
Kemp's
there.
Bay is nice. Yeah, too.
The Glen. I went there early in the morning, 30 minutes before I'm checking my place out. And we had a group interview. I think, yeah, there were a lot of people there. Like, so we had to go in groups of like 15. I went in with my group. I'm sitting on the other end. The interview starts from the other end, you know, asking, where are you working? Tell us why, you know, what's the bottle of varieties, you know.
And you didn't know any of that, right?
Like, you know, the feeling, you know, they're asking you about this food and this stuff. Yeah, by the time he reached to me, I was like, yeah, I don't know why I put myself into it, you know. And people are laughing about other people's answers. I'm like, wait till you come to me. So the guy, yeah, and I remember his name was Robin Thomas and Tamsin Eckerson. The guys interviewing, and they asked, what do you know? Oh, the good thing is, like, I wrote. So I used a set of CVs, like ones I wrote, like I'm a bakery at spa, or the other ones I wrote. And so they picked the one which says I was a baker.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Right. Yeah. So it's like you didn't have to lie. You could just talk about
say,
that.
Oh, we
right?
see you're a baker.
Right. Yeah. Ask me anything about baking.
Like, yeah, I'm picking bread in the spa and I'm loving it. I've never done it, but it's something I've just picked up and I've been doing it. So I'm good at it now. But yeah. So I applied, but I saw you guys call me. I don't have any hospitality industry. I don't even know. I just know there's white and red. But like I say, they put me in the baker 3 months and dishing out bread. If you put me here, I can do that. So yeah, the interviews went. Next day I got a call up like, no, you need to come for the second interview. So this time I was meeting the other managers like, no, okay, we like your personality. Out of that room, probably you're the only one who told the most truths.
I love it.
So okay, we're gonna sign you up. You can start next week, you know, we're gonna train you. whatever. So when I went again, that's where I realized, well, these guys were actually looking for people without experience. Because the other guy was a builder, the other guy was a painter. You know, so they had this program they called Let's Sell Lobster.
Let's Sell Lobster?
Yeah.
So Let's Sell Lobster. Yeah. Okay.
So it was a training program. This guy is a device, like training industry people, restaurants, service, to everything. So you're almost the guinea pigs of that program. So that's how. So sometimes people ask, how, I don't know how I got there. I just put the CV there.
I love it. I mean, honestly, I just love every single part of the story because it's kind of like you just went in with your truth.
Yeah,
like, true. And like, I feel like that's probably why people are so drawn to you because you do seem very authentic. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? This is what it is. Like, you know, like we talked about this before, like you didn't even know about wine when you first started out, right? And so now it's kind of like you're a wine expert.
Yeah. It's quite fun. It's interesting, like people ask me, I don't even know, but this is how exactly it happened. I'm working there, you know, Titorin was one of the, Titorin's Emil's son was one of the directors in the place.
So, at the Roundhouse?
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
oh, so you've been connected to like the Titorin family for like a very long time then. So, I love Emil. He's super amazing.
So that's where, so I was thrust in this place. It's probably one of the restaurants, best restaurants of the time. You know, the food is amazing. The wine selection was like, wow. You're just coming from zero palate to the ish wise. You know? Our first wine farm visits were Titorin, Waterford, you know.
Nice. So like when you were at Roundhouse, that's kind of like when you started to get introduced to wine. Like they would take you to the wine farms.
Wine farms.
And when you had this wine thing, where were you like, oh my gosh, or were you just kind of like, oh, it's wine?
Yeah, it's wine. I actually didn't understand or like it, but now you're so involved. So the learning was more to upsell, you know, tell you this is Titorin Fusion 599, it's the best wine. So you just sell like that.
Yeah, they're like, this is hand, hand crushed and. Each berry selected,
You learn, but it got me interested. Like, there's got to be something more than to it just then. So I got so curious and I like, read, study, okay, it's from this region. Why is it from this region? Why does it matter? Then I got a first real class I enjoyed. It was a Chenin Rodero Robusto, wine made by, what's his name now? Teddy Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the wine was like, so, okay, there could be wine which is. So it became a wine. I was selling the wine quite a lot, you know, because I could understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I tasted it. I could really relate to it. So, you know, someone noticed one of the managers, like, this wine is moving. And he called me aside. It's like, why do you like this wine? I just say, you know, for me, it's delicious. It's just round. It's soft. It doesn't have those acidity. I was like, you could be a sommelier. You know the profession. I'm like, I don't know. But they're saying, no, we're going to start 1 year. So... But it never started there because I don't know what happened to the program. But yeah, you know, you get so consumed in it. But back then, I love the subject, but I don't think I was just doing it for work.
Right, but do you think, or do you, because it sounds like, it seems like you have like this natural, wonderful like palate where you're able to just like kind of taste wines and, you know, make judgments about them, judgments that other people appreciate, right? Like, do you ever just wonder, like, why me, or like, how did this happen, or like, are there other things like that that you have that natural palate or ability for? Like,
I don't know, it's just an understanding and memory. I think wine and food, especially when it comes to palate, is more about aligning your taste with memory. And embedding it in your mind as it comes, and the best part is expressing that as a feeling than expressing it as a subject, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and so most people, having somebody to relate to it, you know?
Because what I've realized is, and what I tell even my guys, what you don't realize is the guest sitting on the table, it might be your diner, but you gotta understand this, they have the same palate as you. So if you're trying to tell them this wine is sweet and it's acidic, I don't want to believe you. So you're not going to have to bullshit, like taste the wine and make them taste, understand it the way you are. The same way you understand it is the same way you told them. You might be fancy and articulate about it, but you can't hide away from the most common stuff that you taste.
Yeah, I like to think of it as like helping people like actually build that experience. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because for me, wine and food is kind of like an experience, and helping people to understand that it's actually an experience. Like when you drink a glass of wine, for me, it's not just, oh, you know, you can just drink Coke, right? Yeah. Coke is Coke. Exactly. When you drink a glass of wine, of course, it's just more of like an experience.
Yeah, of course, you have to.
Yeah.
Have to. So saying what, Rounders was the intro, then I left the Rounders. I did a short stint at this restaurant by the late Bruce Robertson. It was called The Showroom. Another amazing chef, talented. So yeah, that's where I started getting introduced to food now. So because it was an open kitchen, getting much more involved with food. Then it closed down. One and Only was opening just the same time. Then again, these things happen. So happened that Tamsin Ekson was interviewing me for the Rounders job.
Mm-hmm.
Someone knew the showroom had closed, and she was recruiting at the One and Only. She's like, Tinashe, I know the showroom closed, but don't you want to work here? They're looking for people. I'm like, nah, I just got from this job. I just need to rest a bit. I have enough money for me to relax a bit. She's like, no, you have to come. So I went there again.
And did you realize that the One and Only was the One and Only when she called you and she said this to you?
I didn't even realize. Cause
like I'm like, who calls like from the One and Only? And you're like, you know, I'm gonna pass.
What's One and Only? I was having so much fun at the showroom. I thought it was like, and it's like, no, it's the One and Only International. I think you should come. Then I went there. And funny enough, I went there for waiter position. That's what I wanted. So again, it was a group interview. Now there's Ken Shimaya, who was sommelier then. He was a beverage manager there. So we know him in the wine business. Now he's doing his own stuff. He's doing the interviews. Everyone is being interviewed. He comes to me, okay, wine and food, but you know, I'm like, mainly, would you this with the Sauvignon Blanc? I'm like, this is like, you know, just hold on a second here. So that time I was in the middle, so they had to stop the interviews. Like, when this guy, I need to call. He went to the back. Called a guy called Steven Towler. So Steven was the group sommelier for all the One and Onlys in the world. So they send him here for the opening to help him. As I hear them talking, he calls me. He's like, Steven, you need to sign up this guy to, I think he has to be one of yours. Like, what's happening here? So Steven takes me there and there. He comes back with a contract. I'm like, wine waiter. I'm like, no guys, I came to be a waiter. This wine thing. Know what I signed up, because now I understood waiters were making more money,
right?
I didn't know this wine thing. Me, I wanted to make money. Like, no. So Tinashe, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna tell you a secret, the wine waiter salary is higher, and your guy's gonna appreciate the trip, so I can guarantee you're gonna get more money as a wine girl. Okay, so sign me up. Yeah, so I got the job. Now I'm working. I go, so for me it was the first time I've been in the presence of sommeliers. So this head sommelier who's traveled all over, and Andre Baker, who was in my senior sommelier, Eric Potter, who was also a sommelier. There were three wine butlers, and we were three wine waiters. And you know, and this was a team now, like a wine team. To build up the cellar,
like a whole team just dedicated to wine.
We never concentrated on anything. Would understand the food, but as we're running the wine, and, you know, it's like, now interesting. Okay, I've got someone who I can ask stuff. So I used to go to ask Andre, what's this? What's that? What's that? And we packed the whole cellar according to regions. It was so confusing now. So, but in the end, I learned how to put these wines into regions now. But we changed the system, because Andrew would say, Tinashe, if you go in the cellar, if you spend 2 minutes without finding the wine, please come back.
Oh, wow.
I would spend 5 minutes, I have to find this wine, I have to find this. Which region is it? I cannot go. Northeast Stellenbosch. Okay, East Stellenbosch. Okay, Constantia Valley, you know, stuff like that. Then, yeah, after a while, Andre is like, no, what? The other wine butler left. He's like, no, I'm going to promote you a wine butler now. Going up now, like putting into Cape Wine Academy, are we doing this WSET, you guys? So that's where I started realizing, okay, it could be a profession. Then things started to change. Other guys started to leave. Andre left for Norway, Eric stayed for a while, then he moved. Louvre came. Good brother, learning quite a lot. There I was putting myself into Cape Wine Academy, certificates, runs of gold. Yeah, I'm really immense into wine now. Really. So, stayed at the one and only for another good years. 2013, I did the Inter Hotel Challenge. We were doing best wine steward, best chef. I was the inaugural winner of that competition.
Nice.
I remember from my group, probably you know most of the people. Ndaba was working at the vineyard. Malvin was working at the place. Brian, who's now Marianne, also was there. Farai, who's working at Cavalli now. So we cut from that 2013 class. So, you know, how I won it, probably I was better prepared. But the guys were good, and it's actually, I'm happy because it's short now by where they've come from and where they are now.
Right. I mean, and I feel like that's part of the. People ask me why I love Cape Town so much too, but I feel like there's such a community of like people, black people who are in the wine industry, and it seems like they just all have so much support for each other. So it's not, I mean, of course it's competitive, but it's not like a bad competition.
It's like you feed on each other. So yeah, my time there, it almost thrust me in a bit of a line. That's where the magazine started to come through. I remember my first magazine.
Wow.
And yeah, kind of.
So how did you feel I guess I want to say the fame started to come in, like you started to be recognized for this thing?
Really, I always feel like, you know, you do something. I don't want to be famous for just being famous. I'd rather people appreciate what I do than appreciate me as a me, you know, because it's you up, it consumes you in a way. So for me, it was like a sign of being noticed and being appreciated and
for your knowledge, for your work,
and use that to build up or to motivate or inspire someone. So yeah, at some point by then I'd consumed quite a lot of knowledge, and I felt like, you know, I just need something again. And, you know, just challenging, because you've got a senior guy who's there who's teaching you a lot, but you know, you always want to be. I'm that person.
I was thinking when you said that, like, you always want to be more. You always want that next level. Like,
I hate being
that person. Like, I hate being
confined. And,
I hate just being like on the bottom. I hate being in the middle. It's like I really, really want to be on top, and people don't even understand. Like, that drive is just like.
I hate being hitting ceilings. I like, no, I have to smash the ceiling.
Yeah.
They moved me to work into Novo for 2 years, which was fun. Food, that's where I started.
Oh, I love Novo, so delicious.
So yeah, by chance a position came up in Durban, Oyster Works. So I went there for his head sommelier, and I'm running an online program. It's a different place. It's a difficult place to work for, but lovely place to work for, but the environment in Durban is so different. The wine culture is not that, but yeah, I survived and I loved it. And obviously,
I like Durban, the monkeys.
The monkeys I got into trouble with. Luke Dell, Roberts, you know, Test Kitchen, Wave had moved on. Wave, Clovis, and the sommelier moved on. There was a position, someone told me about it. Actually, the guy who does the PR for them, Luke, Ian, the guy from Black, Ian Manley.
Oh yeah, Ian. So Ian is the one who told you about the position at Test
So by the time I left One and Only, me and Ian had started this relationship, you know, because he was doing PR for One and Only. So it's like, national, I think you can fit, just throw your name around, I'll throw it. So he threw the name, and Luke remembered me, because Luke, I used to help serve him when he comes to Novo with his son and wife. So it's like, oh, international, you must come. Did a 3-day thing. It's like, no, you must start work. And I had to leave the Oyster Box, and I almost started to build up a relationship there. You've met Billet. Billet took him from, I actually force fed him into wine. I wasn't interested, like, Billet, I'm gonna leave, you're gonna be, if you like it or not, you're gonna be there. So you start.
What a great gift, because I just had coffee yesterday with Billet, and he's amazing, like, and he's so into this wine, and like, he and I were just talking about, like, you know, going to the next level in this business. And he's such a.
We took him from the floor and forced him. Dude, I'm going to leave, and this is your opportunity to take it. I'll negotiate everything on your behalf. Yeah. Then I left. One and all, Test Kitchen. Jeez. And I remember the first day I came, there was like a whole queue of lots of 10 sales reps waiting for me. It's like, okay, the new guy, I'm here for, so it was like so overwhelming that I'd never been in that environment where, you know, you're working in hotels. Most of the time they're coming to taste, you know. So in the test kitchen now, I was involved in everything: procurement, tasting, costing, you know, food and wine pairing. I was like, geez. And you know, I was understanding food, but I don't think I thought I knew enough about food. Of course, you can pass, you know, this goes well with this, but in the test kitchen it was so different. Like, you know, the dishes come flying every day. Now yeah. You have to taste every day, you have to keep up. Now you don't have the wine in the restaurant, okay, what wine? So it was a real intense first month, that after that I even actually...
Wow, went. That was just the first month that you were talking about? Yeah. Wow.
I was like, you know, I got to look. I was like, you know what, I don't think I'm coping. It's like, you know, I would spend sleepless nights, like waking up, you know.
That's what you told Look Shuffle.
Yeah, like, you know, you know, at some point you'd run out of water now, because I was so into this place, and I'd gone into that place, I wasn't a proper handover. You know, I'm literally looking for where to get the wine, the suppliers, who do I get this wine from, stuff like that, putting orders, and you know. So I didn't understand the culture and nature of the restaurant, and Luke was like, you know, you the guy, just try it out, it's gonna be fine, we'll help you around. So for me, it gave me a bit of confidence, like, okay, now this is it. Now start putting things in place, you know, you get resistance from staff because he's used to this guy. And the fact that I'm a ex-sommelier coming into this kind of environment, other guys didn't understand it, so, you know. So you start building confidence and start winning soul by soul, you know, start introducing. So I always remember the breakthrough I got into winning stuff is like, Luke created this amazing dish, one of the best fish dishes I've tasted. Probably when you came, it was still in
I mean, the food was delicious when I came.
I used to smoke this king clip with miso, you know, it was like,
yeah, I think citrusy. That, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that dish for me, you know, it was like, I just tasted Craig Hawkins wines, the El Banditos, the orange wines. For me, when I just tasted the dish, I was like, the wine. I put it on the tasting menu. And, you know, I was getting slack from all over. Waiters are like, wow, this guest, I'm not liking this wine at all. This wine is not nice at all. This wine is not nice at all. You know, we kind of rode it for 2 weeks until one of the managers to say he had to go to Luke. He's like, I think you need to talk to Tinashe about this wine. And Luke says, okay, guys, make a king clip. Tinashe, what wines are you using to pair this wine? I was like, shit. Go with the wine. You taste the dish, you taste the wine. I was like, damn. This is one of the best tastings I've ever done. Jeez, you know? And for me, I was like, what? I was looking at this, you know, the whole steam big shop. It's like, no. And Luke was like, guys, make the guests understand. This is a proper food and wine. That's where me and him coined the term, we always say international, it's thought provoking for you. It's like, almost like thought provoking. It was like probably one of the best pairings I've ever had. And from then on, you know, the guys understood, the staff understood me. It was
all See, like I said, it's like create the experience, yeah. And like bring them to it. Like sometimes people will just want like the normal thing, right? Like they might say, oh, I want a Chardonnay with my fish, you know what I mean?
And exactly, that's what was happening in the test kitchen. Like I realized, you know, people, it's a food theater, it's experience. People are talking about food, okay, wine was good, but I realized, you know what, I'm giving people what they expect. Why if I don't be, you know, play around, thought provoking, change, spice it up, and it all changed, you know. These people talk about the test kitchen and food and look, but there's a bit of Tinashe and wine, so for me that's a plus. That's why when I went to the test kitchen, that's what I wanted. So obviously my first year, even wine, best wine service award.
What year was it that you actually got to the test kitchen? Like what
mid-2015.
Okay, so I met you shortly after you had been there, maybe for like a year already. And all the buzz was like, because I just remember doing research about wine in South Africa, and like your name came up.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh my God, I have to meet this guy. Like, he's doing some amazing things. So like early on, like, it was just like a buzz about it. And I remember we had wine at your house.
Oh yeah.
Remember?
And then the other place we used to hang around, Kasi Lounge.
Yeah, Kasi Lounge. But I remember we were sitting in your living room and your baby was there and she was like tiny then. Was she even walking? I think she was barely walking. And we were just talking about like your career and the acceleration of your career. And I remember I was like, gosh, you're going to be so big and you're just so modest. And you're just like, oh, you know, whatever happens, happens.
That's how I live it. That's how I live it. But Test Kitchen has been amazing place. It's an amazing space full of creatives.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke manages that very well. So, and you know, he understands that everyone is different in their own way, but everyone brings something to the place. So
he gives you that space for creativity.
Yeah, it's open to chefs and you know, front of house. I've developed my own style. I've developed my own procedures and learned a lot from him. How to manage guys. How to manage the wine guys. What to get.
Whose idea was the beverage carts? I love the beverage cart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because some of it is his. Some of it is mine. But he plans ideas, and you're like, why don't you do this? And you kind of build on it as well. The brandy. I was so involved into brandy. Brought the brandy trolley, which is quite something so unique too. But making is all about, you know, amplifying that experience in a way. And I have to say, I've been very fortunate that he's allowed me now to do more stuff which I feel are enjoyable to me. For instance, my wine label, you know, it gives me time off to do wine judging. So
how do you like the wine judging?
So wine judging, how it started back in, no, I actually got the first tasting notes I did, and the first article which came about it. So it was back in 2013. I just won the Inter Hotel Challenge. I think it was December. Cecilia Galloway was running what she called Classic Wine Magazine. So Tinashe, don't you want to be an independent wine judge? Like, what's an independent wine judge? I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. So I just went there. Now I'm sitting in this room. Wow, there's Teddy Hall in front of me. Teddy Hall is the guy I like the Shannon about, the Rodero Robusto. I'm meeting those Clive Tour there. There's this two other ladies, forgot their names. I'm just sitting there. I didn't know what happens into wine judging. I've got my notebook. I write all my names there. And you remember the whole thing is now they discuss. So luckily the if you, what this guy, you just don't have to, you're not involved in the judging per se.
Like the moderator.
You're not so, yeah, you're,
like
but
the
your score
yeah.
doesn't matter. But they just want you to, what you think about the wine. You know?
Oh, so no, not a moderator, but you were just like. So your judgment didn't matter, but they just wanted you to come and give your opinion?
Good. Yeah, more like that. So I'm sitting there, I'm listening to this guy speak. And to be funny enough, I wasn't even tasting wine. I was just writing what these guys were saying. Like, if I had to be called on the next time, this is what I'm going to be saying. So I used to write my note on the side. Okay, this is like, if wine is like this, you should expect this in a Merlot. This is what I was. Then I did it. And you know, they did the printout of the results. It was had my little name written at the bottom. I'm like, jeez, if only I would also had a picture there. But I'm here because my name is there, you know. So after that, I'm like, but this could be interesting. So what other stuff is there? I asked the guy, say, is there another competition? I was like, okay, we'll hook you up. So I did a few of those independent wine judges, like those Classic Wine. I did some platters, I did some Shannon. Then at some point I went to Durban and I came back, but I said I just don't want to do those judging stuff. how do I do this stuff? Okay, I look around, oh, there's a judging academy. Michael Friedman Judging Academy. I'm like, oh, I'm going for that. 2016, I signed up for my wine judging academy. Went for 3 days. I remember Joseph was in my class as well.
So wait, it's a judging academy. So they actually teach you how to judge wine?
And evaluate wine, yeah.
Wow.
It's still running as well. I think it's still looking for this year. They actually do it in May.
That's pretty awesome. I never even knew there was like, you go to the school and they teach you and then you become
Michael
like
Friedman
a certified judger.
In conjunction with UCT, Graduate School of Business. So I did that. I passed. Yeah, but it really taught me very well. Like that period taught me how to, you know, taste wine. Is what's in the class, the intrinsic values, you know, how to put wine and cost together. So in actual fact, it helped me in the test kitchen where, okay, I get this value wine, put it. I'm not just buying wine just because it's this and this. It's worth it. Does it work for the program? Then from then on, I started getting invited to this wine show, Chenin Blanc. Challenge. I was independent wine judge for wine of the month every Monday. So from then on, most of the panelists run a chairman in other competitions. So it become word of mouth that this guy can taste. You should go there. Now
nice.
I'm judging at Michelangelo. I've been judging Michelangelo 3 years. And this past year, I'm judging with my class. Our chair is Robert Bloom. He's from the Netherlands. So when I got into judging now, I was starting to like, geez, but I want to be an international judge one day. I want to be an international judge, but how do you? So I applied to the IWC. They got me in through Winnie Bowman, gave me the whole heads up, but still I never got invited there. It's like in this London and it's expensive. Like, one day I'll be a wine judge. I'll be an international judge. So this year I'm sitting to this guy. It's funny enough, we were fighting for the same wines in one corner. Like, no, this is a 96. Robert is like, this is 96, and the rest is like, no, sorry. It became more like, okay, I think you're a good taster. So he comes on and says, okay, after we're done now, we're going. It's like, okay, what's up next for you? He's like, no, I think I'm going to India for another judging. Then later in the year, I'm judging for Mundusvini. I'm like, but how do you even get to this?
Right, so he literally spends his whole life traveling from city to city judging wine competitions.
No, they do judge, but they do have other extra, like I do.
But I mean, like his part of his life,
yeah,
like he spends
years,
a lot of time.
40 years he's been judging wine.
Right, but going from city to city, like international cities.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
So
that's
I'm
a
like,
good gig.
But how do you get in those? It's like, you know what? I don't know what this means, but if I'm telling you a secret, I'm one of the chief recruiters of Montesvini. Yeah, I like your tasting and I think you're very good.
Mm-hmm.
Send me your CV and your judging experience, I'll do the rest. And he's looking in the room, he's like, you know, this lady from Italy, this guy from Canada, that guy, I recommended them to the panel and they're judging now. I'm like, wow. So I did send him and just a month ago I got my invite. So next year, February, I'm judging my first international.
Where?
In Germany.
Nice. I can't wait to make it to America though.
Yeah.
Man.
I'd have to. So
America, if you hear us, like somebody invite him to judge a competition in America.
Yes. So I'm, you know, that's how things go. You know, now who knows what happens, who knows what I meet there.
So did the judging, did that experience or that knowledge, that skill set, how did that play a role in Kamusha? Did
yeah.
I say it right?
Kamusha. Yeah,
so I've been practicing Kamusha. All right.
Yeah, so what it goes around is like, you know, I've always wanted to have something like business, something like, but I never knew what that something was. And during my time in Durban, like it was more of a downtime because Durban is that quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd spend my time plotting, writing down what I want to do. Okay, I want to wine plan. Okay, but what am I college for what? Okay, I'll leave it aside. I want to start my own, you know, social platform, talk about wine, you know, I'm a Zimbabwean talking about wine, and I put it aside. And I came here, I'm doing this wine judging, I realized, okay, my palate is really good, and I'm getting wine farms sending me samples to, like, do you think this is good? How can we blend? I'm playing around with winemakers, helping some guys come up with blends. Like, okay, So I always thought if you were to come up with a wine label, you actually have to make the wine yourself.
Yeah, and that's like being a winemaker is no joke.
Yeah, and
we talked about that,
me,
right?
It wasn't my passion. I didn't like it, so that was stalling me. Then what happens now? So first, when I was still in Devon, that's like 2014, 2015, there was a wine program which almost came through. They were sending like they're looking for upcoming entrepreneurs in wine. Yeah, I'm thinking about these business ideas. Okay, let me just apply. So I applied, and back then I remember I had my friend Gregory. Have you met him, Otambi? Who's sommelier at 12 Apostles.
Oh yeah, yeah, I have met him. Yes.
Greg, see this thing? Let's apply, man. It's like, Greg, what you thinking? Like, I sent him this proposal. This is what we need to do, and pitch. I've got all the business plan done, the analysis, just taking figures from everywhere. So these guys had to fly us out and, you know, going to the wine. We did almost like a, you know, the Dragons, like where you're pitching your business.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What is it called? Shark Tank. Shark Tank, right?
So I'm pitching to these guys, you know, they're sitting like, guys, you need something here. So then I was thinking about creating a wine brand, you know, bottle, you know, we do labeling and stuff. You know, guys, like, so the only problem which came was, I'm not a South African citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg wasn't as well. So I said, guys, the bad news is we like your idea, but this program is for South African citizens. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, okay, it's fine. Okay, I put it there. I left it then. When I came to Cape Town, 2016, because I read a lot and I come across stuff. Oh, there's this UCT postgraduate diploma in wine business management. I'm like, that's my thing. Pick a phone to Greg. Did you see this thing? And I was just like, what thing?
Greg is probably like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
You see what we talk about? Like those guys who didn't. There's another one. Let's apply. And how much is it? It's like 20K. It's like, shit. I'm not going to get 20K. But I'm like, dude, I don't know where I'm going to get it, but I'm just going for this thing. Or I'm going to apply for bursaries there also. Looking for bursaries, apply bursaries. Oh, geez, okay, but qualify for bursaries because you know, in
what's
Africa,
what's a bursary
like a grant? I don't
oh,
know,
like a scholarship.
Yeah, scholarship,
like
yeah.
A scholarship. So, a bursary is like a scholarship. Okay,
I'm like, no, you can't get it, but I'm like, okay, it's fine, I'll look for money. And then I didn't want to go back to the test kitchen because I'd actually asked him money for the wine judging course because I pitched it up, it made sense for him. Chef, they wait to teach me how to evaluate wine, so I can get wine to the test kitchen, so I can help pay for it. But this one now, I was like, geez, I'm piling up now. I had to look for money, like savings, and put my money there, 20K straight. I'm talking about, and other guys signed it up, but no, Pearl came in our classes, on Daba was in our classes, or Greg was in the class. And yeah, we got the first case study. There's a big Portuguese community in Cape Town. You're tapped to come up with a wine brand, you know. And this is the time where I was thinking, okay, I'm coming up with my wine brand. There's a Zimbabwe community in Cape Town. What if I create that brand? But it didn't make sense when I was doing it. It didn't make sense to anyone, even Greg. Even anyone. When we went to school, Greg looked at me first, like, dude, this is what you're talking about. Then I took on that project, my group nailed it, because I had all planned out. So when I came out from there, I come to the test kitchen. We do the post-modular assignment. You have to do like a project in your in-house. So I did a project for Luke. I'm like, look, this is what I did for my class, for my project. What do you think I want to implement in the test kitchen? Luke was like, you know, this is a good thing, but do you actually think it's better for me? But me, I'm thinking you must do this stuff for yourself. Like, what? You know, I've been thinking about my wine label, and this is what I'm thinking. But John was like, go for it. We'll sell it in the test kitchen. We'll sell it in Portland. We'll sell it. So I'm like, okay, where must I get my wine? I know Artie Opstyle. I've been working with Artie. I need some wine. I say, no, come, let's blend. We blended. I blend. What do I call it? Jeez, my God, I decided to think strong now. It's like, so by then, I was reading a book. Have you read? Jonathan Nunziata, Liquid Memory.
No.
You
should definitely read that one. Liquid Memory?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Jonathan Nozieta is a former sommelier, so he's traveled. He did the Mondo Vino, the movie.
No, I haven't seen that movie.
So he did that. So I'm reading this
book. I'm going to read that book.
There was one profound statement he said, because he'd been struggling about what's terroir and how do you define terroir. And he'd been asking these people, and like, terroir is your home, is your roots, it's where the place of the wine is. And he mentioned something which stuck to me. It's like, what if terroir is where the wine takes you to?
Nice, I like that.
So me, I've been struggling, you know, you're writing these exams, blind tasting exams, and what was so interesting is I started to nail my tasting exams when I picked up a wine and I tasted something I remembered growing up in the rural areas with my grandfather eating, and I'm like, this is Semolo. But if I'm writing, I'm going to write European terms, blackberry, black currants, blah, blah. But I have found the wine already. I had my table of reference of things I remember. So now when you mention it, it's like, but this is what I think. So this wine is taking me back home first, then I come and enjoy it. So why can't I call my wine commercial?
No, I love that. I love that way of like identifying the wine, because I feel like that's where a lot of people struggle. It's like, how can you relate it, right? Yeah. And I know from our previous conversation, you were saying like one of the difficult things is like, they don't have gooseberry. They don't even have gooseberries in America. Like, right? Who's ever really smelled a gooseberry? Right? And so it's kind of hard, you know, when you try to smell or, you know, identify these different aromas or identify what it is that you, not even the aromas, what it is that you connect to in a wine. So I love that.
So it's a point of reference. So everything is about reference. And, you know, most of it was to do when I was sitting with the older judges and wine of the month, they're talking about their grandmother's garden and talking about this. I'm like, okay, that's what's supposed to be.
So when people taste Kumusha, you want them to go, to Zimbabwe?
No.
Or to Africa?
No, I want you to go to America where you're tasting stuff you remember.
Okay.
Yeah. So it has to, and that stuff.
So you want people to go to a place that feels like home, when they taste your wine. Yeah.
Anywhere where the wine takes them, if the wine takes them to this party they had and it so resonates to them, I want a wine to be that evoking memories. And that's what wine is all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the taste is nice, but wine is all about who did you drink it with? Where was that? And it evokes you, or which place you were. I think for me, that's how I enjoy wine. That's what it does to me. I even keep empty bottles because I remember the wine I drank it there.
I know. I became a hoarder because I was like, I like looking at the empty bottles. I like remembering who I had that wine.
Most importantly, it's not about the taste of the wine. Most importantly, it's like when you drank the wine, who was with the wine? So for me, I wanted a wine which takes me there. And for me, it made sense in the fact that I was claiming I want to make a wine. I'm not a winemaker. I don't own a vineyard which has terroir, but how can I be authentic without claiming myself to be a winemaker?
Right.
Yeah, I can blend my wine, which when I'm drinking can take me to somewhere I want. So that's why I'm so confident, and I always hate it when people tell me I'm a winemaker, because I don't make wine at all. Some people will make the wine for me. I'm a good blend of wine. That's my skill.
That's a good skill though. Yeah. Like, that's a good skill to have, because
it's the most difficult part in wine.
Yeah, because you can have good juice, you can have great grapes, but can you make a good wine from that? You know what I mean? Can you put those flavors together so that, you know, it's something that feels good, that tastes good, that people enjoy, that people can connect to?
So I remember this time last year, that's when I launched my first 1,500 bottle.
When you sold out so quickly.
Sure.
I came thinking that I was going to be able to taste the white.
Yeah.
And when we met, you were like, no, it's all sold out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, Tinashe, for real? You were like, no, that's it's right. Literally sold out.
Yeah. So it's gone exponentially. After that, I followed up with a red blend, I think. It was 2,500 bottles sold out. Now I have close to 4,000 bottles of the white.
Oh my goodness.
And
those numbers are pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So if you did 1,500 for the white, and then 2,500, and then 4,000, and then that means next year it's.
So this year, because I've now, like you're saying, it's not about South Africa anymore. I'm Zimbabwe. So last year I spent quite a lot of time in Victoria Falls because I consult for Licorama. She imports and distributes wine and spirits in Victoria Falls and Botswana and some places. So I come up with another one.
Well, if you need a personal assistant on one of those trips to Victoria Falls, hello, yeah. I can take great notes.
Yeah. So I worked with Le Monde, Hannes Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
So I blended Sauvignon Blanc, Merlot, and Syrah, which, talking by now, should be in Victoria Falls.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a big job.
That's a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal to have, like, your baby, kind of, like, you know, something that you love so much, and to be able to come, like, full circle, and to be able to say, you know, like, imagine your mother going to a restaurant in, you know, Zimbabwe, and saying, you know what, my son, I know you don't like to be called a winemaker, but my son makes that wine. Like, that is a big deal.
So, for me, I was like, the other day, I wrote it on my post. I'm thinking, you know, 10 years ago, I came with a one change of clothes to South Africa. And, you know, the it's so polarized sometimes, yeah? You know, the xenophobia at some point. You know, you get people, okay, these guys are coming to take our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. And deep down in heart, you know, sometimes humans survive, humans move on, humans, but everyone is being genuine. I always feel if I'm getting a job, I want to be better than, I'm not, what's the correct term? Entitled in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it like really hit home, like, okay, I came here looking for a job,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm exporting wines, probably creating jobs and paying other people, so.
I mean, it really hit home.
I was like, one of those moments, just didn't realize like that's what's life. So,
right. I mean, I feel that same way too. So it's not only about like being successful, right? But it's about also being able to create opportunities for like other people. For me, that's like definitely the definition of success. You know, because you can make as much money and be as famous as you want to, but if you're not like reaching back or creating opportunities for other people, for me, I personally feel like, you know, it's kind of like a waste of success.
Okay. So
yeah,
that's been it. Yeah, still loving it. Next year, another one.
Nice.
Starting to travel quite a lot as well. So
I was about to ask you about that. Okay, so like your passions, outside of your beautiful children, your two daughters, your passions, wine, food, and now travel. It seems like you have this travel bug. Like, I definitely have the travel bug, and I feel like once you get it, it's like it's all over.
This one thing I've always wanted to travel, but now, and one opportunity I wanted to create, because I felt the sommelier in South Africa, especially black sommeliers, we all, obviously some will travel, exception of Lupo and other few guys, but I'll be like, but what's limiting us obviously is the finances you have to travel.
Oh yeah.
And the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this thing, I remember when I was a waiter, I was like, but I want to travel, but maybe I'll never travel because I'm a waiter, I have to be working and stuff like that. But in the past 2 years, I've realized me, if you can plan well, and, you know, you can travel quite a lot. So I use every opportunity I can, be business, work, or going to the tasting championships and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's, for me, that's the thing about traveling. Like, I started traveling like later in life as well, right? Because, you know, I didn't grow up like with a lot of money and rich and this and that. But the moment that I took my first international trip, I think I went to like outside of Mexico. I don't count that because that's like,
it's like South Africans in Melbourne.
Yeah. And so I went to Barcelona. And like after I took that trip to Barcelona, I went there for 3 weeks and I went by myself. Like ever since then, I've just traveled. And ever since then, I realized that it's really not as hard as people think. It takes a little bit of planning, takes a little bit of saving, but it's really not that hard. And it's so worthwhile.
It's back. So my first one was actually last year, October, first international flight.
To France?
I'm going to France.
Well, that's a really nice international trip to take.
I'm a group of people I'd come to make as friends. You know, we're going to the tasting championships. We're traveling the vineyards. We're traveling with the MWs. You know, you're going to Germany. You're going to... Now it started to make sense. Okay, so when I taste Riesling, this is what I'm tasting. So it almost fulfilled everything. So, but yeah, I hope I get more opportunities to travel, more opportunities to...
So if there's some place, because you know I'm here in South Africa and I'm living here for at least 1 year. And hopefully, like, my goal is to go to another country next year, the next year, live there for a year. Is there a country that you can think of? Like, if somebody said, hey, listen, money... You know, time, none of that really matters. Yeah. Like, we can transport you, your whole family, all anything you need.
Yeah.
But you can go spend another, you can go spend a year in another country. What country would that be?
Jeez. Obviously, I would have to tell you to go to Zimbabwe. But in Victoria Falls.
No, you, not for me. Like
for me.
Victoria Falls, that would be great. Okay, Zimbabwe. But then I feel like Zimbabwe is so close to South Africa. Right. I can just like go there for a weekend, back. Right?
Where would I want to stay?
But where would you want to go? Because you can't, not Zimbabwe has to be a country that you have not been to or like that you're not from.
Jeez, because everyone's talking about Rwanda. I'm actually going to Rwanda in 2 weeks' time.
Where?
To Rwanda. Rwanda.
Oh, Rwanda. Yeah. Nice.
Rwanda.
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 Yeah.
Rwanda. I also love Kenya.
Okay.
So probably stay in Kenya as well.
I want to go to Ghana.
Yeah. Not that much affinity for it, but I would survive there.
I think I'm gonna go to Croatia though. That's gonna be my next like city outside of the African continent.
Europe, not to stay that much. I don't think I'd love to stay in Europe. I'd love to visit there. I think I'm rooted to Africa.
I love it.
I'll be excited to go and travel and camp, but I don't think I would love to stay there.
I love it. You gotta go to Spain. I think if you went to Spain, you'd be like...
So this coming year, I'm doing a trip to Portugal and Spain.
I want to go to Portugal. I haven't been to Portugal.
And Sherry. I love Sherry, so I have to go to Hellas. Visit those potatoes and stuff.
Well, it's been so awesome talking to you.
It's a pleasure.
Oh my goodness, I'm super excited about 2019. Was that
an hour?
Yeah, an hour. Wow.
Yeah, 2019 is gonna be awesome. Like, I've got stuff I want to do, like stuff I want to achieve. Yeah.
Do you want to give us like any like hints, like give me something that nobody else knows, like I want the inside
scoop.
Not much.
I just want to be, you know, I feel like I'm evolving, and now most of the stuff has been about me building brand, but here or there I've been talking about relevant stuff if I'm not in my case. But I think next year I have to be like, you know, when you're doing something, you don't realize how impactful it's been coming. Because you're always chasing for the... I'm always chasing for the next eye. It's like a fix.
Yeah.
Like when I get the Kumusha one, it's out. But damn, it's out.
You know what? Yeah, you are super like.
So I'm always looking on the next fix, and I forget that there are actually some people would actually want to be helped to get to where I am. Mm-hmm. But I'm not even looking back and say, guys, come, let's go as a movement. So I almost felt like, okay, I'm that part, and the guys who are there, but they should be here with me as well. So I think next year I'd love to get that conversation going.
So 2019 is going to be a little bit more about like reflecting and reaching back, and more so than just like, because you've been accelerating at a pretty fast pace.
I felt it's just too...
Yeah, I mean, it just would be nice to like reflect and reach back, and then like, you know, to have like a whole foundation and team right there with you. Yeah, I get that.
Probably hopefully my own podcast as well.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. Yeah, we're gonna talk about that.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, and watch out for the upcoming documentary I did with my friends. I think it's...
When is the documentary? I've been seeing you guys film this for like, it seems like forever.
Yeah, it's forever. So it's coming out sometimes mid next year.
So there's no more filming now? They're just putting it together?
Yeah.
That's going to be big.
Exciting. We went to places everywhere. I even went to Kumusha, so let's see there.
Oh gosh, that's going to be awesome. Now Kumusha, when he says he went to Kumusha, that's... On his label, there's like a village, like a house.
Yeah.
And that's like the house, the compound that's on, like the house that's on this compound, right? Yeah. So that's what he's talking about. He even went there. So I'm excited about the documentary.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
It's been awesome talking to you. Like, I swear we could probably go on for hours. Hours.
For ages.
Yes. Wow, so what a great conversation with Tinashe Yamaduka. Yes, I said it perfectly. Practice makes perfect. It was so great to talk to him about his journey with Kumushu Wines and to hear all the exciting news that's going on with him. I just love talking to him. Our conversation went a bit longer than I expected, but it was so well worth it. If you liked hearing from Tinashe and you want to hear more conversations like that, please just let me know. Let me know if there's any winemakers or anybody in the wine industry you'd like for me to talk to. I am here for you. If you'd like more information about Tinashe, you can always find him on Instagram. So on Instagram, he's at Tinashe_Yamaduka. And then you can also just look up his wine brand. His wine brand is on Instagram by the name Kumusha Wines, Kumusha Wines. So all of this information will be in the show notes. I am so happy that you joined us and that you continue to listen to our podcast. Please show us support in any kind of way by retweeting, by liking and sharing on Facebook, by mentioning this podcast to friends. All your support is 100% appreciated. Until next time, have a wine-mazing life. Thank you.